Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Gresh and Keith.
Pavetta's going more than 2 2/3.
Oh!
On the record.
Nick Pavetta with a 2-2 count to Jose Altuve. Raffy throws it behind the bat. Oh. What a pick by Schwarber. 1-2-3 they go. And after 4.5, Red Sox lead it 2-1.
Andy Gresh.
Swing and a miss at a slider. Got him, and that's the ball game. Astros 9, Boston 2.
Winning 9-2.
Rich Keith.
What do you think of the strike zone? I'm not going to comment on that.
I didn't agree with the JD call. I didn't. You know, we thought it was a ball. He thought it was a strike.
Gresh and Keith.
Yes! Not yes! Not yes! Hell yes!
On WEEI.
Big final hour, big final hour. Anson Carter of TNT, the NHL on TNT, will be with us in about 8 minutes from now, and we'll talk to our Odyssey NBA insider. He's a local, Ryan McDonough. Will break down the Celtics with Gresh and Keith here with you on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Baseball comes your way. It is the pregame at 4:07 and first pitch at 5:07. It is game 5 between the Red Sox and the Houston Astros. Chris Sale on the mound.
Yeah. How do you feel?
Your thoughts.
I'd feel worse if the Astros weren't in a similar spot. Like, I think Chris Sale, as much as I've been against him in the starting rotation and was not surprised that he only went 2 2/3 in game 1, I didn't like that he went in game 1. I don't know, if you're Houston, you think Valdez is going to go 5 or 6? I don't.
Hell no.
So it could be, if that's sort of a wash and you get into the bullpens for both teams, especially after the performance, I don't know if the Astros, I'm pretty confident they can't duplicate what they did. 7 2/3 scoreless, and they had to use some of their main guns, who I don't know if they'll either be available, or if they are available, they probably won't be able to pitch as long today. So I think the Red Sox still have the pitching advantage.
Who are you more nervous about? Chris Sale or Tanner Houck coming in after Chris Sale, considering this hasn't been the cleanest series for him?
Good point, because are we going to pat Chris Sale on the back if he goes 2 scoreless? You're like, oh, hey, he didn't give up a run. It's like, okay, you went 2 innings, or you went 2 2/3 again.
Well, it's
like,
funny.
What's a good Chris Sale start look like to you?
Oh, a good three clean innings.
Three.
Once through the order, I would say that is
good.
If
he goes 3 shutout innings, I guess you'll take it. And then you say, what, Sale and... So is the formula Sale and Houck for 6?
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
And like at some, whatever, however it adds up? Okay.
3-3 and figure out the other 3, because it is offense depending. And
speaking of the offense,
I will get to that. But just real quick, I am not against Alex Cora if Chris Sale is pitching well. I've always said rolling, dealing.
I know. Modern day dealing.
To stretch it into the 4th or the 5th, given that there were times where Eddie Rodriguez, it was like, okay, how long are they going to let him go? And again, I know the score is a big factor in all that, but I think if Chris Sale is pitching well, I would not be surprised if Alex Cora tried to ride him an extra inning outside of going through the order once.
And I think once again, it comes down to who is up. So Sale, obviously different than Pavetta, right? One's lefty, one's righty. So if he comes up and he's gone 3 and he looks pretty good, and you're wondering, you're not going to bring Houck out to pitch to Brantley, Bregman, I know he's a righty, and then Alvarez. I think that's the point. We just saw it last night. They're like, all right, we're going for Brantley. They threw in Josh Taylor in the 6th inning, and then even Martin Perez in the 9th because of the lefty splits. So I think Sale in this case, would stay in an extra inning to face 2, 3, and 4 in the Astros.
That's a really good point.
But if it's Sale gets out of a jam, he gets Alvarez, let's say, and Correa's leading off the next inning, then Sale's gone.
I would agree.
Okay.
That makes sense. You were going to ask an offensive question.
So this is an offensive stat that I believe is right because I came up with it. I didn't find it anywhere else. So
take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, take it with a grain of salt.
Okay.
Because I asked Will Fleming if he's afraid the Red Sox are too reliant on the home run. And then if the home run's gone, how are you going to score runs?
Fair question.
Last night they scored 2 runs, 2-run homer by Xander Bogaerts. They have scored 26 runs in the series, 22 of them from home runs. It's like they're not knocking in really any runs.
And last night, there were runners in scoring position left all over the place.
All over the place. They took 7 walks. And again, you can definitely argue, and we did all day long, that it should have been more. Laz Diaz, if he knows what he's doing, there might be 9 walks on the Red Sox. But there was 7, and yet they still couldn't capitalize on all the base runners that they had. So that is pretty frustrating. But again, do you think the Red Sox offense, the combination of the Red Sox offense being down 2 games in a row and the Astros bullpen being up 2 games in a row? I don't think so.
That's what I'm banking on, is that the Astros bullpen will level out
another great
whatever
stat?
Issues the offense might have. Absolutely. Yeah. Stat it up.
Alex Cora in the playoffs has never lost back-to-back games.
Wow.
That's nuts. I mean, they roll in 2018. Again, it's a small sample size because they didn't make the playoffs in 19, and he wasn't asked to be a part of baseball in 20. So it's really just 18 and 21. But his teams have just never lost back-to-back games. And if they're going to lose this series, they're going to have to lose back-to-back games.
I think the real wild card is not only the umpiring. I get that, but can the Red Sox get off to a good start? Because not only did, and even 2-0, like last night, okay, 2-1, fine. I would sign up for that. The sooner you score, the sooner you get deeper into that bullpen. And to me, isn't that today's objective? Even if it's 3 walks and you end up gobbling up whomever the opener is.
Oh, yeah, and you get the crowd into it, too.
Exactly,
which we were saying was such a player, I think, in game 3.
And people won't, I know they won't have as much time to get lubed up, but they'll be lubing
They'll find a way. It's a nice day today. It's like a nicer day today.
Hanging out in the park.
Yeah, you're getting out of work a little earlier. You're going to have to. It's a 5:08 first pitch. So you take a half day. You head on over there, getting all hammered.
And if you need to, you can go to Dossiers for ALCS.
Wiggy was wearing the shirt. That shirt looks nice. It's a good-looking shirt.
How did we not get one?
I don't know.
We're the creators of this.
At least give Shime one, for God's
sake. Well, there you go. That's
spokesman.
They're playing the drop all morning. At least throw them a shirt.
That is true. I will say they were wearing out that. And I did hear 9-2 on the Greg Hill show today as well.
Wow. So.
I'm getting work on every show.
Wow. Shime is.
Royalties are going to be rolling in. By the way, I already screwed up my own stat. The Red Sox have scored 27 runs, not 26. That didn't take long. So
he
I think
said
I,
in the
hashtag math.
So he said the offer show. Yeah, like, I don't know if I got this right, but what the hell?
I think it's 22 of the 27 runs. It's a great. There's a great stat in there somewhere. You guys can figure
out
the rest.
Right. Where's the numbers network?
I mean, part of it is you hit 3 grand slams, so that's 12 runs.
Right.
I got that right. That's 12 runs alone. And then the 2-run homer last night. I think there was another 2-run homer. There's a 3-run homer. Then they've hit 10 home runs in the series.
Right.
That's a pile.
And I know I got a guy on the text who's being like, "Oh, keys of the game: score runs early. Profound analysis." Well, yeah, because
I'd like to see you come up with something better. Well, 7-4.
Because think about it: if the opener for the Astros gets into the 4th inning. Is that not disastrous for the Red Sox, given the fact that
now they can bring their main guys back?
The team is on fumes right now. That's why you got to dominate in those first 2 innings, or at least do we got to burn up a bunch of pitches. It's like the way the Rays would attack the Red Sox.
Yeah, because back in the day, you feel like if Max Scherzer gave up a couple of runs or Verlander,
that you'd be okay.
You kind of stick with him, and then he still fights through and gives you 6, and then you turn over. Now they run scared from you.
And there's the Sale piece of that as well. So first 3 are massive. Joining us now on the Harbor One Hotline, it's going to be really weird for me to say this. It's the NHL on TNT is now a thing, and former Boston Bruin Anson Carter is a part of the group breaking down pucks on TNT. He's with us on the Harbor One Hotline with Gresh and Keefe. Anson, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well, and it sounds a little bit odd right now, but you better get used to it. You're going to have the NHL and TNT for the next 7 years.
Awesome.
So, is Barkley already is Barkley already getting territorial down there in those Turner Studios, or are they leaving you alone?
They're giving you some space. After you saw Chuck's performance in net, I don't think he wants anything to do with hockey for at least another couple of weeks.
That's a good point. Yep, give him a little bit of a break from that. It was a good performance, though. But, Anson, curious, your outlook on this Bruins team. Obviously, no Tuukka Rask, at least to start, no David Krejci. So some new guys, a lot of familiar faces. But what are your expectations for the Bruins this season?
You know, I think they're going to be right there in the mix. That Atlantic division is going to be tough. It's not going to be easy, but I like the Bruins team. As long as you have that perfection line still there with Pastrnak, Marchand, and also Bergeron, I think you have a chance. Like, those are the guys that are definitely driving that bus. I like Jeremy Swayman. I like the upside that he has in net for them. And Charlie Coyle, I like him down the middle. And then you got Charlie McAvoy in the back end, you know, signed that big ticket, showing that the organization has a lot of faith in him and being the number one defenseman and really paying him and treating him that way. I look for McAvoy to take that next step to become an elite defense in the National Hockey League. And I think playing with an American Olympic team this year, I know he hasn't been announced as being part of that team. I'm almost positive that he'll be part of that team. I think he'll get a lot of experience playing with all those top elite American players in the Olympic tournament, which I think he'll be able to gain a lot of valuable experience to bring it back to Boston.
You mentioned down the middle. How important is that? It's always been important, but is it more important in today's game to have that strength down the middle, even if some of us back here in Boston don't love all of those guys after Bergeron?
Yeah, it is super important, especially when you have a young goaltender. Because remember, your centerman is the first guy back to help out your D a lot of times in the defensive zone coverage. So when you have a young netminder still trying to find his way in the National Hockey League, you want to have someone like a Patrice Bergeron. You want to have a guy like Charlie Coyle that could shut it down, know exactly where to play, don't overthink it, don't over run around too much in his own zone. Because what happens when you've got a young player and they don't really feel comfortable in their own zone, they end up not trusting their teammates and they try to do too much. And more often than not, you've got two players and one guy in the opposition, and that usually means one guy's left open. And I wasn't a math major at Michigan State. You've got 2-on-1. That usually means one guy's open and the puck's in the back of your net.
Anson, what was your reaction to the Linus Ullmark signing this offseason by the Bruins? It was for 4 years, $5 million a year. I know it caught me by surprise because you knew Jeremy Swayman was the guy they were developing. He showed flashes last year, and he ends up getting the start game one. He's starting again tonight, and Ullmark had a tough preseason, but it's a decent amount of money to give a guy and 4 years.
It is, but I've got a lot of faith in what Donnie Sweeney is doing there and Cam Neely. They haven't done anything in the past that's led me to believe that these guys don't know what they're doing. So I'm going to give Sweeney like a lot of rope, former teammate of mine as well. But Ullmark is a player that I think has gone under the radar a little bit. But if you know what you have talent-wise, I'm a big fan of locking those guys up and paying them. It doesn't make sense waiting and seeing. And he's played on some terrible Buffalo teams too. Right. So you don't really have a real understanding what he is as a netminder. So you put a player like Ullmark, in front or behind a better Boston Bruins team, I think you can see better goaltending. And then again, like I said, with Swayman being there, who I think is going to be able to handle a big bulk of that of the games there in Boston, I'm pretty comfortable with what they have in the pipes for the Bruins this year.
Anson Carter of the NHL on TNT with Gresh and Keefe. He joins us here on the Harbor One Hotline. Do we in Boston, maybe do people in the world of hockey, maybe take Bruce Cassidy for granted? It's almost like he never gets his nose dirty. He really doesn't say a ton, but he's very, very steady. How do you view Bruce Cassidy as the head coach of the Bruins?
I think he's a great coach. He's one of the top coaches in the NHL for a reason. Even when the Bruins go through their stints with injuries, you don't really see much of a fall off, from the way they play. And a lot of that has to do with coaching. Coaching is so understated in the NHL. And I really don't understand why that is, because they determine a lot of the times whether a team gets in the postseason or not. Because there is injuries, there's so much parity. And if a coach has the real finger on the pulse of the room and he understands, you know, the players to play, the players not to play, what you need to say in the media to poke the bear a little bit, how you need to, like, pull back on certain players, I think those are the players that get the most out of their teams. And I think Cassie's done a tremendous job. I like coaches that have gone through it one time. Maybe they've gotten fired, and then they've had an opportunity to sit back and learn from their mistakes. And he's a way better coach than he was back in Washington. I mean, I think anyone will tell you that. But he's taken the time to really study the league and play to his strengths and get better with his weaknesses. And I like his in-game adjustments also. So I'm not worried about, you know, Coach Cassie there in Boston whatsoever.
Now, you mentioned you were a teammate of Don Sweeney's. You were also a teammate of, like, 18, 19-year-old Joe Thornton. Are you surprised that he's still out there at 42 and, you know, it doesn't look like his career is ever going to end?
I am, but I'm not. I remember there's times I lived right at Longfellow Place right next. It was called the Fleet Center back then, not TD Garden. Mm-hmm. But I remember Jumbo would call me in the afternoon. He's like, "Hey, so you want to come over and eat Pop-Tarts and play video games?" I'm like, "Jumbo, this is the National Hockey League. Like, I'm taking a nap. I'm trying to rest up here." But he just loved life. He loved playing the game. So I'm not that surprised because he just enjoyed being at the rink. Just a happy-go-lucky guy. The sun was never, ever in the clouds when Joe was around. It was always sunny outside and tremendous weather outside whenever Joe was around. And he could have the worst day, and you couldn't tell. So I'm not that surprised at all. And when you have that kind of disposition, teams like to have that in your locker room. There's so much stress playing the National Hockey League. It's a grind for 82 games, a lot of ups and downs, guys being in and out of the lineup, that you need to have veterans that have been through the wars that are able to put a positive spin on negative situations. And that's a big reason why Joe has been able to survive for so long. Not only that, but also be productive too. Like, he's never going to put up 100 points like he once did. But he's a good, valuable teammate for veterans to be around, but also for young players to be around also.
Anson, I want to give you a chance to wax poetic about Patrice Bergeron. And a lot like Bruce Cassidy, it's another guy that around here, we all love him. But if you don't have a trained hockey eye, I don't know if you appreciate a lot of the little things that this guy does. What is it about Patrice Bergeron that stands out to you that makes him so special?
He's such a complete hockey player, and he's never in a rush to get through passing lanes. You know, speed is such a big key with hockey today that I watch a lot of players, and they're open, but they're in such a hurry to get from point A to point B, they skate themselves into coverage, almost like a wide receiver in football that might be wide open running, you know, down the sideline, but then he cuts into the middle where all the coverage is, and he's not open anymore. So Bergeron has that uncanny ability to read the play, but also knowing to shut the engines down a little bit and take that quiet area. And it also helps to play with Marchand and also helps play Pasta too. Those are two elite forwards. And I compare Bergeron to Andre Kopitar in L.A. The difference is Kopi doesn't have those elite wingers to play with. So he doesn't have to, you know, he's got to do a lot more than Bergeron does. So Bergeron is able to play off his winger skill set, but also now Marchand can do what he does best and get on the forecheck. And Pasta could do exactly the same thing. He could forecheck, but he's got the one-timer available. But you watch the way Bergeron plays the game, and he's so effective in that bumper position in the middle of the ice, especially in the power play, is because he's so smart. He's never in a rush to get to where he needs to go.
The Buffalo Sabres are somehow 3-0 without Jack Eichel. How do you think the Eichel situation is going to play out?
I could tell you when you're in the room and you've got something like that happening, it's a bit of a distraction, but when you get on the ice, you don't have to worry about it. I remember when I was in Boston, we had Bubba. Everyone was talking about Bubba getting traded. Ray Bourque, as people don't know him as Bubba maybe, but when Ray Bourque was getting traded, he didn't want out of Boston, but there was widely known that if given the opportunity to win a Stanley Cup, the Bruins were given that chance. I remember the media was always asking us about it constantly. Like, you don't want to talk about it, but you have to. It's like the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. And then finally when Bubba was traded, like, it was like a air out of the balloon a little bit. Like, we could exhale now. We could take over the room. And now we could take the lessons that we learned from him as a tremendous captain in our locker room. And now we have to take ownership of the room. And I feel like that's what Buffalo is doing right now. Jack's no longer in the room. So guys are getting an opportunity to say, why not us? Nobody's picking them to do anything. So right. To get to that level, to play at the highest level, to play hockey, you have to have a lot of pride. And that's what I'm seeing right now. Can they maintain it? That's a big question, because remember a couple of years ago, Buffalo started out on fire.
Right.
The Sabres did.
and then
they forgot. Yeah. It's an 82-game schedule, not like a 10-game schedule, uh-huh. And they're terrible. So it's I like the start, but I'm still watching, and I'm really hesitant to really say this is a playoff team.
Bubba for Ray Bourque? Really? Like, did when you first heard that, were you like, okay, like, did you think somebody was ribbing you and setting you up to, like, call him a fake nickname?
No, because Bubba's like 5'10", 5'11", like 220 pounds. So he looked like a Bubba. He was like Bubba. Thick. Mom. You know what I mean? The thick arms, thick legs, thick neck. So he looked like a Bubba. I live in the South now, so we see a lot of Bubbas down here. So, oh, yeah, I wasn't that surprised.
There's a lot of Bubbas.
Different kind of Bubbas down there, no question. Now, I know that the hockey, I know for a lot of people, like we have Andrew Raycroft, right, who comes up, and they call him Razor, which makes sense. But isn't it really like you just add a Y to the first or the last name or something like that, and that's how the nicknames come up with in hockey? So what was your nickname?
I had several nicknames. I was Ace. I was AC. I was Danton Anson. Jumbo used to call me Puff, as in Puff. P. Diddy, Puff Daddy. Oh, I love Bad Boy Records. I love Biggie Smalls. So I've had a number of nicknames.
Puff.
I just listen. As long as you didn't call me Anson, I was good, because if someone's called me Anson today, it's either my parents or my wife. So,
okay. Oh, wow.
So we can call you Puff then?
Call me Puff. If you call me Puff, I think it's Jumbo's calling me.
Yeah. All right. Well, a good conversation about Bubba and Jumbo with Puff Carter with us here on the NHL on TNT. Anson, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. Hopefully we have a lot of reason to talk during the year. Thank you much.
Of course, guys. Anytime. Appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
That's good stuff there. Anson Carter. Very affable. Really good breaking down the game. I like that.
Oh, definitely. And, Bubba. I don't know
Bubba,
that.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
But also, I think him just saying that a 19-year-old Joe Thornton would call him up and say, come on over and play video games and eat Pop-Tarts, that's the greatest thing. That's a nice nugget right there.
You heating the Pop-Tarts? You eating them right out of the
package? Right out of the chute. I've never heated a Pop-Tart.
Never?
Never.
I have.
Strawberry ones heated up are real nice.
Yeah, I only like the strawberry, and get out of here with the frosted.
I like the one.
What?
What's
frosted's the worst.
Frosted's are awesome.
Ugh.
Blueberry.
Shyam and I have a history here. Before we were like in the day parts and doing nights and stuff and late on Patriots games, we used to house every Pop-Tart in the kitchen at this place. I think we must have set records, Shyam. It's the international food of media person who's working too late and forgot to bring food.
S'mores Pop-Tarts, blueberry Pop-Tarts, right up my alley.
Now, what's the one that I like? The frosted
cinnamon
brown.
Sugar?
No, frosted brown sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah, brown sugar cinnamon.
Oh, okay.
That is the best one right there.
No, what a shock. I'm a plain Jane when it comes to
plain
it.
Plain Jane.
However, the danger of the heated Pop-Tart is when you put it in the toaster oven, you can kind of burn the corners a little bit.
Gotta be careful. That's that light toast. You just want to warm it up.
That's right. Yeah, it's almost like you're better off. But the problem is you put it in the microwave, it gets a little soggy.
It's a risk reward for me. I'd rather just right out of the bag.
Because it's also like with a Hot Pocket, if you heat it up too much,
the
filling on the inside is just going to burn your tongue.
You can't cook
that. That's why
you
just got to get it nice and warm.
No.
I'd rather eat a shoe than a Hot Pocket, quite honestly.
You used to live off Hot Pocket.
Well, put a sauce on it, you'd be fine.
Yeah, I understand.
The amount of times I've burned the top of my mouth.
Yeah, it's not worth it. That's why I don't drink hot coffee. I've had hot coffee once in my life.
Once?
And you burn your mouth?
Yeah. Oh no. Well, I know my own limitations, so I just don't do it. No, it was when we were in Minnesota for the Super Bowl. I've never been that cold in my life. It's the coldest in the. I'm from New England, and I've never been that cold. That week we were in Minnesota for the Super Bowl, I was like, I'll go hot coffee. But yeah, I burned my mouth. I'm not patient enough. No. Iced coffee year round for this guy.
I can get behind that. By the way, Odyssey NBA insider Ryan McDonough will be joining us in a little over 5 minutes from now. Our insider calls are presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights the sportsbooks don't want you to see. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Here's Shime. He's ready to trend.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Andy Gresh and Rich Keefe. This is Gresh and Keefe on EEI.
Celtics open the regular season tonight. God dang it, we had a busy show today. We've eviscerated Laz Diaz.
Yes.
Callum Scott joined us in studio for a little musical accompaniment. Mm-hmm. We've talked to Anson Carter. Now joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is Odyssey NBA insider, former NBA GM Ryan McDonough. And Ryan McDonough is presented by BetQL. Mr. McDonough, good afternoon. It's a big night around here, as you could imagine. And I don't want to say I feel bad for the Celtics, Ryan, because, hey, listen, when sports are good, it's good for everybody. But it kind of feels like this Celtics season has kind of snuck up on us here a little bit.
It has. Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's always great to be on with you guys. And yeah, even in the decade plus, I worked for the franchise when the Red Sox were playing into October in the playoffs or the Patriots were rolling. I felt like early in the season, even in the late 2007 to 2010, that range, when we were going to the finals seemingly every other year, it was overshadowed. But that was one of the thoughts, guys, with potentially pushing the NBA season back to start around Christmas to get away from baseball and especially football. That didn't work out great. So here we are back on schedule. And with the Celtics, obviously, they're getting started tonight at MSG against the New York Knicks.
And I think everybody would agree that Jason Tatum is the Celtics' best player, and he has gotten better as his young career has gone on. What do you think in his game he needs to improve to take it to even the next level?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because I think there are a few small adjustments. Just watching a little bit of preseason and reading the quotes, especially from Ime Udoka, it seems like he's taking the next step as far as his playmaking. I think on the ball, his playmaking, his passing. I look at it this way, guys. I think for a talented young player like Tatum, who's 6'8 and can get a shot at any time, it's a blessing and a curse sometimes that you can create a shot, make any shot. He's that talented, but that doesn't mean he should try to create a shot every single time and score, you know, for himself. He needs to get others involved, get to the free throw line a bit more. So I think on the ball, it's creation for his teammates. Off the ball, I think it's movement, cutting, move the ball, get it back. If I look at the development of a young player we had in Phoenix and Devin Booker, there are a lot of similarities to Tatum. They're both terrific young talents. I thought Booker was too ball dominant, isolation heavy early in his career. He learned to move without the ball and get it back, and that made him even more efficient and more deadly. And I think Tatum certainly has the ability to do that and has some talented players around him as well.
Ryan, why should any of us believe that Marcus Smart will be a different player under Ime Udoka than he was under Brad Stevens?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you necessarily want Marcus Smart to be a different player. I know I may be in the minority there in New England, but with bringing in Dennis Schroeder, they have a more traditional point guard, at least a scoring point guard, who Schroeder's strengths are Smart's weaknesses and vice versa. You know, if I'm Ime Udoka, I want Marcus Smart to be who he's always been. You put him on the ball defensively, have him guard the best backcourt player on the opposing team, whether that's a point guard or even a shooting guard. He has that kind of versatility. He has improved as a three-point shooter. And then you try to limit some of Marcus's weaknesses, which are decision-making and playmaking. So for me, I like the guy. I like his competitiveness. He is not your traditional bring the ball up the court and initiate your offense point guard. But I think if you try to make Marcus Smart that, you're taking away from some of his strengths, especially the defense and the intangibles with the physicality and loose balls and all the other things he does to help a team win basketball games.
What do you think the ceiling is for this team? And then on the other side, what do you think the floor is?
Yeah, good question. I think the middle of the Eastern Conference this year is really going to be a battleground in that 3 to even 9-10 range. I think it's going to be very competitive. I think at the top of the conference, you'll have the Milwaukee Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets. I have a little bit of separation with those two teams in particular. With Philadelphia's issues, I think they're in the next tier along with a bunch of teams. I think it's a deep group with Atlanta, Boston, Chicago, Miami. We'll see what happens with Indiana and the Knicks. The Celtics play tonight, so it's going to be a battle to, you know, try to get in the top four, get home court advantage in the first round. Certainly, the Celtics should want to stay in the top six if they can to avoid the play-in. But again, I think the middle of the East is better than it has been. So I think the ceiling for Boston is maybe the third seed in the Eastern Conference. If they can be the third best team behind Milwaukee and Brooklyn, I think that would be a heck of a regular season. The floor, I think they're right around that play-in range and that 7-10 range, or maybe battling to get in. Because, you know, I look at the teams at the bottom of the conference, like Orlando. The Celtics are clearly better than Orlando. They're probably better than Toronto. But, you know, we'll see if a team like Charlotte can surprise. Detroit will be down at the bottom as well. Can the Celtics stay in that, you know, 3-6 range, avoid the play-in? And then ideally, if they get the 3 or 4 seed, get home court in the first round.
Ryan McDonough with us on the Harbor One Hotline, former NBA GM. He is an Odyssey NBA insider. And, of course, Ryan is presented to us by BetQL. We haven't mentioned Jaylen Brown, and it feels like, Ryan, nobody is talking about Jaylen Brown. What do you expect from him this year? And for those of us who don't have the trained basketball eyes like you do, how would we know that he is continuing to grow as a basketball player?
Yeah, I think he has grown every year. I mean, I remember him at Cal, watching him in the 2016 draft, and you know, coming off a good high school career, he really struggled for Cal and Danny Ainge, and the front office was heavily criticized when they selected him with the third pick in 2016, which turned out to be a brilliant selection. So I think Jaylen's added to his game every year, especially the skill aspects of his game, the shooting, the ball handling. He was, you know, relatively raw. He was always strong and athletic going back to high school and college, but he's really refined his game. So I think, you know, similar to Tatum, that'll be the next step for this team, guys. Not only for Tatum and Brown individually, but the playmaking, the ball movement and player movement. When I watched them play last year, I thought at times the ball stuck too much. They got too isolation heavy. They weren't moving and cutting. And if you look at teams like the Utah Jazz and the Phoenix Suns that had a lot of success last year, especially in the regular season, the ball whipped around. A lot of guys touched it and got it back and moved without the ball. We'll see if Ime Udoka can implement that this year in Boston. I would urge Celtics fans to be patient with Brown if he gets off to a slow start out of the gate. Obviously, he's been battling COVID. There were some questions about whether he would play in tonight's game against the Knicks. It looks like he will play, but you know, if he got knocked down with COVID for the last week or so, I don't expect him to be the borderline all-star that he's been right out of the gate, given what he's dealt with over the last couple of weeks.
If you were running the Nets, how would you handle the Kyrie Irving situation?
Probably a lot of red wine would be my first step. Maybe some of the hard stuff after that. Getting to some brown or clear liquors. It's really just, you know, beyond frustrating. And guys, I'm on record last year when James Harden was available on the trade block from the Houston Rockets saying Brooklyn should really think about trading Kyrie, just Kyrie, for Harden. You know, in that case, I don't know if the Rockets would have done that or not, but in that case, that Brooklyn could have retained, at least theoretically, Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and a bunch of draft picks. Obviously, Brooklyn didn't do that. They traded all those guys and then, you know, a number of picks and pick swaps. And look, I think you really have to hope that if you're Brooklyn that Kyrie does get vaccinated at some point. I give them a lot of credit for sticking to their guns and saying you can't be a part-time player. You can't just play in road games. That'll be distraction. But I don't know what choice Sean Marks, the GM, and Joe Tsai, the owner, have at this point, guys, because Kyrie right now is radioactive around the league. His trade market is limited, maybe non-existent, because even look at, you know, Philadelphia with Ben Simmons or some of the other teams who are championship contenders who could use Kyrie's talent. I think if they look in the mirror and ask themselves, do we trust this guy? Do we really want to deal with all these issues, given what happened at the end of his time in Cleveland, when he was, you know, with you guys and with the Celtics in those couple year period, and then now in Brooklyn on a team that, you know, had the best offense in NBA history last year and was a heavy favorite to win a championship. I think a vast majority of the other 29 NBA teams, if not all of them, say, we just don't want to deal with that guy. We don't want to deal with those antics because, more than anything, we don't know what we're going to get. We don't even know if this guy's going to show up and play basketball.
Speaking of showing up and playing basketball, apparently Ben Simmons woke up a couple days ago and was like, oh, I guess I should show up and report to camp. If you're Daryl Morey in Philly, what in the world are you doing with that situation?
Yeah, and another tricky one. You know, that one, I think Philly will have to work out a trade eventually, because, you know, the unfortunate reality of the NBA guys, especially with a guy with 4 years and close to $150 million left on a guaranteed contract, is he can keep doing this for a while if you know, he's willing to forego game checks and get fined and things like that, just deal with the circus. So my guess is Simmons gets traded some point before the trade deadline in February. You know, I know what Philly says. They're going to try to rehabilitate him and get him to fit into the locker room and, you know, have him forget the past. I don't think that's going to happen. I'd be surprised if that happens, given how Simmons has acted basically since Philly lost to Atlanta in the Eastern Conference semifinals last year, and then this entire offseason, starting with a holdout and then the recent antics since he's returned to the team. Look, at the end of the day, you can't make a guy play hard. You can't make him care more, and you can't make him give more effort than he's willing to give. So if he's not going to do that, it doesn't become a question of if you're going to trade him. It becomes a question of when you're going to trade him. I think Philly will trade him, and I guess the timing of that is whenever they can get the best trade package between now and the trade deadline in February.
Now, you were in Phoenix when DeAndre Ayton, you guys selected him number one overall, and he's been good. He hasn't, you know, been Luka Doncic or Trae Young, but he's been really good. I thought he was really good in the playoffs last year. And I kind of assumed he was going to get that long-term deal with the Suns. They didn't do it. So what's sort of the future there? And in another year or two, I guess, could he be playing somewhere else?
Well, yeah, it's a little surprising and disappointing that he did not get the contract extension. He wanted a max deal, and that was not offered by the team. So yeah, he's a restricted free agent next year, guys, in the 2022 offseason. There aren't a ton of teams with salary cap space in the marketplace right now. However, at 23 years old, a guy who put up historic numbers, you know, going to the NBA championship a year ago in terms of points and rebounds and efficiency, he's going to be maybe the top free agent on the market next year. It was a little baffling the Suns didn't pay him, especially given that they did pay some other guys. I get Mikal Bridges. He's a very good player, extending him. We drafted Mikal when I was there as well. But then, you know, Landry Shamet, giving him an extension that they just traded for, was a little bit head-scratching when you're not going to pay Ayton. So I think there is some, you know, friction there between the player and the franchise. And, you know, I think for Ayton, he just needs to go out and have a tremendous year. And if he does that, he'll probably be a max player next year. Either the Suns will give it to him or he'll get an offer sheet from another team in restricted free agency.
Ryan, we've only got about a minute. Your thoughts on the year that Aaron Nesmith might have? What are your expectations?
He's an elite shooter. I think he really showed that he could make shots on an NBA floor last year. I've been reading the stories about the shooting displays he's put on and in the preseason workouts and training camp and things like that. So I think, you know, can he be more than that? I think he showed that he could do a little bit off the dribble last year. Can he expand on that? Teams will run at him, guys. When you're a knockdown shooter, teams really sell out to close out to the perimeter and try to not let you get those catch-and-shoot three-point shots. So, you know, they're going going to be driving opportunities for him? Can he use those to get to the basket and finish or get to the free throw line? Or, as we discussed with Brown and Tatum, can he use those opportunities to make plays for his teammates? That's what I'll be looking for from Nesmith. But I thought after, you know, somewhat of a slow start a year ago as a rookie, he really came on late in the year. And so I'm excited to watch him play this year and see if he can continue to develop in year two.
Longtime NBA front office executive Ryan McDonough, Odyssey NBA insider, joining Gresh and Keefe to start the Celtics season. Ryan, thanks, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you down the road.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Ryan. There goes Ryan McDonough. And he is presented to us by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. You got something? Well, it might be a whole bunch of Boston parlay. We'll bring home this edition of Gresh and Keefe next.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Back to more Boston sports talk. Gresh and Keith on EEI.
Time for You Got Something, sponsored by Unified Office. If you run restaurants, don't lose football takeout orders or reservations due to customers getting busy signals or being stuck on hold. Get the solution at unifiedoffice.com. All right, let's get our degenerati on, Keith.
Boston Parlay, like an all-timer Boston Parlay tonight. You have four teams in action tonight, starting at 5:08 with the Red Sox in game five of the ALCS against the Astros. Celtics opening up the season at the New York Knicks. You have the Boston Bruins taking on the Philadelphia Flyers. The New England Revolution and our good friend Matt Turner taking on DC United. So you can do a parlay just for those four. You can also get nuts if you want and tag on a little Patriots Sunday against the Jets. Or if you just want to do a one-off here, there's all different odds at all different places, so it's going to vary slightly. But right now, I'm looking at $100, and I included the Patriots in this one.
Okay, so you went all five.
I went all five. $100 to win just under $2,600.
Same for the Sportsbook Rhode Island app. It's like $25.98 all five. If you just go all four teams playing tonight down at Sportsbook Rhode Island.
What are you looking at?
Plus $1,983. So that means if you did pizza money and put $10 on it.
You're doing all right.
You're in $198.30.
That's pretty good. I kind of like it. Which team that's playing tonight do you have the most confidence in? And which team do you have the least confidence in?
The Revs, for some reason, because they're plus 230.
Yeah, why are they such big dogs?
Weird. Son?
I guess I don't bet a lot of MLS.
The only reason I have spoken to my underground sources, and the only reason we can come up with is because this game is not necessarily as important for the Revs as Saturday's game will be, whereas it's very important for DC United to stay in the playoff.
Also, betting soccer, there's the old, it could be a draw, so then that takes odds.
But the Revs are a straight-up 5-0 against DC United this year, and they're unbeaten in their last seven. So betting Revs and or a draw seems
like a play. I'm taking the Revs. I hate to be just so...
Oh, no. Da-da.
I kind of feel good about all of them.
Oh, okay.
I know. I'm serious.
I thought you were going to put a Maluki on the Reds.
No, despite Grant Williams being in the starting lineup tonight because Al Horford is out, I still feel good about them against the Knicks. I feel good about the Bruins because it's Swayman again.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel good about the Red Sox because Cora doesn't lose back-to-back games. And I think the Bats had one off night, and they'll be back. And I can't imagine the umpire is as bad as he was last night either.
So ride the Boston parlay as hard as you want. Chime, do you have anything?
Yeah, guys, I do, actually. Keith had mentioned how he wanted his own Wikipedia page. Well, instead, you got an update to your name in the WEEI Wikipedia
page.
That's
not what I asked for.
Well, this is what you got.
What's
it
say
reads,
now? Oh, great.
Rich Keefe commonly refers to his Division 12 college football career and is known to have had a career-ending injury while losing to Fat Eddie in an underground sumo league in Rhode Island. While competing in the sumo league, Rich was known as Slim Whitman.
Slim Whitman!
Oh!
Don't sleep on Slim Whitman.
There you go.
Okay.
John, you got something?
I do, and I'm still catching my breath from the Callum Scott interview. But as a show now, we have crossed the threshold into the music world. And Rich, I don't know if you knew this, but we missed a huge opportunity today.
We did?
So I'm going to the Red Sox game today at 5. And immediately after, I am going across the street to the House of Blues to see Angels and Airwaves, a.k.a. Tom DeLonge, the one who got the U.S. government to admit that UFOs and aliens exist. He wrote a song called Aliens Exist as a member of Blink-182 20 years ago. We could have had Tom DeLonge in studio talking aliens with you, Rich.
Is he still in town tomorrow? We got to have him
tomorrow.
I don't know.
I don't know what time they're shipping out. I can ask him.
Oh, I can talk aliens with that guy.
Do you want me to yell?
He convinced Gresh about aliens.
Do you want me to yell middle of the show?
You're the best. What time are you available tomorrow?
Bring a sign that says Gresh and Keith.
Come on in.
Just a list of times that he can call in.
These are all
available. Number.
We have other guests. You can't step on Ray Kroft or Rappaport or Michael Irvin. But any other time.
That's right.
Absolute marathon tonight. Maybe Colin Scott will be on stage. I don't know. Gresh, what do you got?
So I'm already done. So tomorrow we have Ian Rappaport. We have Andrew Ray Kroft. We'll get you your perfect lineup. We'll slow burn it. And the playmaker, Michael Irvin, will be with us tomorrow. John and Shine produced it. If something went wrong, blame them. For Slim Whitman, I'm Fat Eddie. Join us tomorrow at 10 a.m. for more Gresh and Keefe. Rolodi and Fourier are next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.